Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Classic FM. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, country, rock, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one, it was on this day back in 1975 that singer B.J. Thomas did what? Was it A, he wrote and recorded the song Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head? B, he sang the song with the longest title of a number one song on the Billboard Popular Music Chart? Was it C, he acted with Robert Redford in the film Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid? Or was it D, he performed at the memorial service for Elvis Presley? B.J. Thomas, what was it he did on this day back in 1975 anyway? And question number two, it was on this day back in 2006 that Keith Richards of the Rolling Stones did what? Was it A, donated his Les Paul guitar to the Arthritis Foundation charity? Was it B, won a Grammy Award for Songwriter of the Year? Was it C, he quit the band in the middle of a televised concert? Or was it D, he was hospitalized after falling out of a palm tree in Fiji? 2006, Keith Richards did what? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of April 26th. Well, it was on this very day back in 1891 that composer Sergei Prokofiev was born in the Ukraine. Prokofiev was known for such compositions as Peter and the Wolf and the ballet Romeo and Juliet. Born today, 1891. And it was 38 years ago today, 1986, that for the very first time a compact disc of an album was released before its vinyl version. The album was The Art of Excellence by Tony Bennett. It was his first album upon re-signing with Columbia Records. That was 1986 today.
Together, you walk right in the door, just like you've done before, and wrap my heart round your little finger. Here you come again.
Dolly Parton's Here You Come Again introduces our country music news. It's titled, You Too May Be Kin to Dolly or Princess Diana. Heard those family stories about famous kin? Here's how to find out. This is written by Alana Nash in AARP, September 2023. Dolly Parton is my fifth cousin once removed. It's not a close enough relation to go in the will, but it will certainly score bragging rights. I had wondered, since the country music queen and my late mother favored each other, and my mom was from Dolly's Tennessee hometown, but it was Dolly who first mentioned it. "You look like my kinfolk," she said in 1977 when I first interviewed her. Then in 1988, I attended a Dolly reception at which she stopped dead in front of my mom and asked, "Are we related?" That started my search of discovery. Want to find out if you have a famous relative? Here are four suggestions to get started. 1. Take a DNA test from such websites as Ancestry, MyHeritage, FamilyTree DNA, or 23andMe. Number 2. Visit the free FamilySearch.org site. Number 3. Visit FamousKin.com. And number 4. Check online public records like census data or marriage certificates. And who knows where your search may lead. In 2016, when I handed Dolly the printouts of our interviewed and intertwined family tree, she reached out her hand and said, "Well, hello, sis."
And here I go.
And in jazz music news, Quincy Jones plays Michael Jackson's Man in the Mirror. It's titled Three Songs You Didn't Know Quincy Jones Wrote for Other Artists. This is published in AmericanSongwriter.com. Jacob Itey, October 21, 2023. The 90-year-old Chicago-born songwriter and music icon Quincy Jones is one of those people who doesn't seem real. From his early beginnings in the Pacific Northwest as a burgeoning jazz artist to working with Michael Jackson and countless other artists on projects ranging from pop singles to orchestral composition, Jones has done it all. We wanted to dive into three songs that Jones lent his efforts to that turned out to be a boon for three other songwriters and performers. So here are three songs you likely didn't know Quincy Jones wrote for other artists. Number 1, Get the Funk Out of My Face, The Brothers Johnson. For fans of the basketball-themed comedy film, Semi-Pro, starring Will Ferrell, this song may already be familiar, as it was part of the movie's soundtrack. Either way, this funk track from the family group comprised of brothers George Lightning Licks and Louis Thunder Thumbs Johnson was co-written by Quincy Jones. Number 2, Yeah, Moby There, James Ingram with Michael McDonald. This song, written by a cadre of big names, including Quincy Jones, won a Grammy Award for Best R&B, performance by a duo or group with vocal. It's also another song to feature in a film, The 40-Year-Old Virgin, 2005. Originally, the song was released on James Ingram's 1983 LP, It's Your Night. It hit number 19 on the Billboard Hot 100. And last but not least, how about number 3, Foul Out, Boomer and Travis. From the iconic and Oscar-winning 1968 Sidney Poitier movie, In the Heat of the Night, this song is another in a string of song offerings written or co-written by Quincy Jones. The twangy country song may seem different from what Jones, known for jazzy, soulful pop tracks, is accustomed to writing, but that just shows his genius. And in Music Research, we have this article titled, Why Birds Sing Loudly in the Morning. This is written by Frank Graff, August 15, 2022, in PBS, North Carolina. What do choirs, orchestras, bands, dancers, and athletes all have in common? If you answered they are all performers in their respective fields, you'd be correct. And what do performers do before they go on stage or take the field? They warm up to help ensure that when it's their time to shine, they perform at their best. Duke University researchers have discovered that birds do the same thing in the early morning. A 2024 article titled, Why Do Birds Sing? Six Reasons and What Their Songs Mean, published in nature-mentoring.com, adds, a bird's song is a thing of beauty to the listening ear. It tells us when morning is approaching, like nature's alarm clock. But why do birds sing? If you listen carefully, you'll discover it's not just about sounding pretty. It's also an important part of their survival strategy. Birds sing mainly to mark territory and attract mates. It's a way of maintaining their space and family so other birds don't steal their livelihood away. Birds sing for territory as a way to let other birds know when an area is claimed. Typically, these birds and songs are directed towards other members of the same species because that's who they're in direct competition with for food and nesting sites. This is why birds of two different species can often live close together quite peacefully, but keep their distance from other members of their own species. Some birds need a lot of space and want little competition for food. Other birds are more open to living in a community with others and sharing certain parts of their territory. These species dynamics all therefore affect the intensity of song carried out by individual songbirds. An ideal landscape with plenty of resources will therefore support a higher population of a particular species. This is one of the reasons why some environments seem to have so much more song than others. If a bird has secured a good area for mating and nesting, it will be easier for them to attract a mate. Some birds, like the American robin, will perch on a high, visible post to sing to make sure their song gets the maximum range. Other birds, like sparrows, adopt a different strategy by slowly circling around their territory, singing from different locations. There are also communal birds that don't seem to care as much about territory at all. Birds like swifts, swallows, or waterfowl, who travel as a large flock, sometimes don't maintain very precise or large territories. Birds have an organ called the syrinx, which has two bronchial tubes, allowing most birds to sing with two pitches at once. They have independent control of both tubes, allowing them to make a wide variety of song pitches and power. Many human vocalists would be jealous of this power and skill. Typically, most singing birds are male. They use a variety of notes and sounds to demonstrate skill and entice females. Male cardinals sing for their mates by using sweeping notes, where they can jump from wide ranges of notes seamlessly. It's a way for the male to show off to females and catch their attention with their singing skills. Their double voice boxes allow for a variety of notes that even surpass what a keyboard can make. All this complexity helps to deter other male cardinals from coming onto their territory. Birds are not born knowing how to sing for mates. Instead, they have to listen and learn from other adult songbirds. Then they practice those songs until they perfect the notes. Other birds, like catbirds or mockingbirds, learn to mimic other species. One theory about why birds sing so much at dawn is because this is often when their voices carry the farthest. There tends to be less observable wind and noise pollution at this time of day to interfere with the sound, so it makes sense to invest extra energy in singing at this time of day. Dawn singing could also be a way for birds to listen to their neighbors and let them know that they're healthy and survive the night. Though the dawn chorus tends to be the most intense period of song, many birds will continue to sing throughout the day, especially during times of nesting and courtship. This is especially true in places that don't get excessively hot during the afternoons. Birdsong is still made for the same reasons at this time of day, but you'll often notice it sounds a bit more laid back or lazy. Birds sing during this time to keep rival birds away from their territory as well as their food sources. There are also quite a few nocturnal birds who mainly sing at night. The reason for this difference is primarily the result of their nocturnal lifestyle. Birds simply focus on singing when they're active and have a need to either maintain territories or attract a mate. Mockingbirds, hooting owls, whippoorwills, and nightingales are just a few examples of these nocturnal birds that sing at night. The reality and great mystery of birdsong is there's a lot we still don't know about why birds sing. Therefore, we have to include the possibility that some birds may also sometimes sing just for the pleasure of it. It is well researched that singing is a very healthy activity for humans. It helps to activate the parasympathetic nervous system, which promotes healthy and emotional release. So why not birds, too? Maybe they have fun exploring their voices and making a variety of sounds with their double voice boxes. Birds can also borrow songs from other birds. Some species will gradually add songs and sound to their repertoire. Maybe they're trying to take sounds from other birds during their migrations and bring it back to impress the ladies. These new sounds can make their song more complex and thus enticing more mates. To summarize then, birds sing for a variety of reasons, but mostly it all comes down to territorial or mating reasons. Different songs can hold various messages for other birds, such as potential mates or rivals. These meanings can also change depending on the time of day and the species of the bird. Simply knowing these songs have deeper meaning makes it possible to appreciate the bird song more. The one thing that's certain is birds are definitely communicating with one another.
You wanna get ahead?
Yes.
Fools who run their mouths off wind up dead.
Yo, what time is it? Showtime!
Like I said.
Showtime, yo! I'm John Lawrence in the place to be. A 2 pints of Sam Adams, but I'm working on 3. Ha! Those red coats don't want it with me, cause I will pack, chicka plack. Till I'm free.
Hey, oui, mon ami, je m'appelle Lafayette, the Lancelot of the revolutionary set. I came from afar just to say bonsoir to the king, cause it's toi who is the best, c'est moi.
Lin-Manuel Miranda from the musical Hamilton introduces our pop music news. It's titled Fighting Words. This is published in Travel Trivia by OAT on the 2nd of April, 2024. Question: what ancient Scottish tradition gave us 20th century rap and the most popular musical of the 21st century? Answer: flighting, F-L-Y-T-I-N-G. The fine art of insult battles.
Who are you?
Who are you?
When the musical Hamilton exploded onto the theater scenes, audience members were treated to the sight of our founding fathers trying to verbally dominate each other with rapid-fire insults and rhyming boasts. For some viewers, this seemed completely new. Others recognized these exchanges as rap battles, showdowns between MCs, rappers, proving their dazzling linguistic skills, often while either resolving or extending feuds. The roots of rap battles actually are much, much older than Alexander Hamilton. In Scotland and England, the tradition of flighting has been around since the 5th century. The wittiest of men tried to take each other down a peg with off-color jokes, incendiary claims, and the earliest recorded uses of scatological humor in English. These verbal jousts became something of a spectator sport, including command performances in the court of James IV. The slams could be quite elegant. Gray-visaged gallows bird, out of your wits gone wild, but were just as likely to include references to genitalia, excrement, and perversion, which we will kindly refrain from printing here. Shakespeare, no slouch, was a master of these insult riffs. In King Lear, for example, Kent demolishes Oswald by calling him, quote-unquote, a knave, a rascal, an eater of broken meats, a base, proud, shallow, beggarly, three-suited, 100-pound, filthy, worsted, stocking knave, a lily-livered, action-taking knave, a whore's son, glass-gazing, super-serviceable, finical rogue. Over time, variants of flighting showed up in the English Parliament, came to the colonies via slave owners, appeared in printed Civil War broadcasts, and gained popularity among African Americans of the Roaring Twenties in word games known as the Dozens. A good 1,600 years after flighting first took hold, the insults keep flying, as they will for as long as there are humans to hurl them.
It's a blur, sir. He handles the financials.
You punched the bursar.
Yes, I wanted to do what you did, graduating too, and join the revolution. He looked at me like I was stupid. I'm not stupid.
So how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this day, back in 1975, that singer B.J. Thomas did what? Was it A, he wrote and recorded the song Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head? Was it B, he sang the song with the longest title of a number one song on the Billboard Popular Music Chart? Was it C, he acted with Robert Redford in the film Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid? Or was it D, he performed at the memorial service for Elvis Presley? Correct answer? Answer B, he sang the song with the longest title of a number one song at the top of the Billboard Popular Music Chart. The song was Hey, Won't You Play Another Somebody Done Somebody Wrong song. The song debuted at number 99 on the Billboard Hot 100 on February the 1st, 1975, and it won the 1976 Grammy for Best Country Song. As noted in songfacts.com, this was B.J. Thomas's second number one hit on the Billboard Hot 100 chart, his other being Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head. Thomas also scored many number ones on the adult contemporary and country charts, being something of a cross-genre sensation. Still, this hit came after a long period of waning, though still considerable, popularity. And the answer to our second question, it was on this day back in 2006 that Keith Richards of the Rolling Stones did what? Was it A, donated his Les Paul guitar to the Arthritis Foundation charity? Was it B, won a Grammy Award for Songwriter of the Year? Was it C, quit the band in the middle of a televised concert? Or was it D, was hospitalized after falling out of a palm tree in Fiji? Correct answer? Well, as noted in AmericanSongwriter.com, falling out of a tree doesn't usually become one of life's defining moments, but for the Rolling Stones' Keith Richards, That was just what happened after he took a tumble from a coconut tree in Fiji in 2006. What resulted was a severe injury that almost took his life, a surprise surgery halfway around the world from home, and a media community that went wild with speculation. So what really happened on that day in April 2006, and why was it so significant? In April 2006, Richard was touring with the Stones. During a break in their touring schedule, he took a trip to a small island near Fiji to enjoy a vacation with his wife Patty and bandmate Ronnie Wood. At one point, he took a break from the beach to climb a tree. When Richards attempted to climb down, he slipped, falling to the ground and striking his head. He initially shook it off and seemed fine, even continuing some of the afternoon's activities, but was soon thereafter admitted to hospital. So let's close out today's program with what almost became a near miss for the demise of the Rolling Stones, their 1978 hit, Miss You. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.